Welcome to the one race a year that Ferrari actually has a chance to win. It's the Le Mans 24 Hours Preview on Motorsport 101. Ooh, self-burn. Once again, those are not actually all that rare. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 661 of Motorsport 101. I'm your friendly neighborhood host, Mr. Dre Harrison. Glad you could join us. And welcome to me recording four episodes in 2 days. It's a busy time here at M101 HQ. Coming off one of the busiest motorsport weekends of the year, especially if you're someone that covers, I guess, the big three plus Le Mans, which is coming up this weekend. I didn't realize until last week there was actually a triple header when it came to the stuff we normally do, and then Le Mans on top of it. And I was like, oh, shit, here we go. But as promised, we've done it for the last few years, so it's only fair we try and keep that tradition going. This is a Le Mans 24 Hours Preview. The three of us are going to be split across the next four episodes that are coming out over the next week and a half. And joining me from France, as opposed to somewhere in the east of the United States, is Mr. RJ O'Connell. Hello, RJ.
Hi, glad to be back. And this is actually not the closest the two of us have ever been in proximity to one another for a Motorsport 101 recording. I think you may recall that it was, 2023 after Le Mans that I did the show from somewhere around the Wimbledon district of London to kind of wrap up the race, which was, God, what a race 2023 was. What a race 2024 was. I couldn't be on the last two previews because work got away. And when you are sharing a small house with multiple people, you kind of feel bad for kicking them all out of the room to record a stupid podcast. But because of commercial changes, some wonderful benefactors, I now have a hotel room for race week, so I can go back and do the Le Mans preview.
The budget has expanded. I love to hear it. Great to have RJ back for us on this one. As we all know, he also does this professionally for DailySportsCar.com. They've even stuck him onto the YouTube channel, which was cool. I was like, look, it's my friend talking cars and shit, looking all professional. I'm so proud of him. It's really, really neat. I like giving him the heebie-jeebies whenever I say that. It's fantastic.
The other thing we got going on at DSC, DailySportsCar.com, is the DSC Academy, where we're bringing in younger people who, let's face it, Dre, you and I both know that it is extremely hard to make something resembling a living in this sport.
Absolutely.
Doubly so if it's not Formula One. Doubly so if you don't work for a major publication. And who knows? That major publication just cut the legs right out from underneath you before your career ever gets going.
That's never happened to me before. Twice. I'm the Pep Guardiola gif of pointing my finger to the sky and saying twice. But yes, we love DCK. I'm just glad that there is an organization out there that does what, in my opinion, they all should be doing, and that is giving youngsters a chance to get their foot in the door, because it is a fucking hard industry to break into professionally. I don't think it's a coincidence there's been a huge upturn of people doing it as a side hustle or doing it as an independent and basically cutting out the middleman. I think there is a mixed sort of attitude that comes towards that. Like, I'm glad people want to get into this space, but also it's sort of having an effect on where the money's going. So no, I'm a huge advocate for the DSC Academy, and I'm really glad an organization will take that chance on people, because we just don't have a lot of that in this space anymore. Like, I grew up in a time where we had the Autosport Academy, but that's no longer a thing anymore. And if anything, if I'm honest, it was a bit exploitative at times, quite frankly, but I'm glad that it exists. I think my man Ewan's over there as well, because I used to work with him at Autosport, and he's fantastic. Great Autosport guy.
Absolutely. Ewan Wayne is one of our members. Natalie Johnston, formerly of Dive Bomb Motorsports, is the other new addition to the team. She's great, by the way. Love working with these two. I think it's going to be a fun week. We're recording this Tuesday night. June 9th. So bear in mind, the only on-track action that we've had so far is Sunday's test day. We have not yet started any of the official free practice or qualifying sessions. Take that for what you will as we discuss the preview for this race. But in the meantime, Dre, why don't you tell the fine folks where you can find us?
Basically, you can find us indeed. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101 or on facebook.com/motorsport101 or on Twitter, motorsport_101. And if you want to follow the pair of us personally on Blue Sky, you can. It's literally our names, RJ O'Connell, Andre Harrison, blue sky.social, the usual extra bits at the end. When's Blue Sky cutting that down? It just seems so unnecessary. Anyway, also on Instagram, motorsport101pod, if you want to get some highlights of the show on there as well, some video highlights of that. And our TikTok page, of course, TikTok at motorsport101_podcast, M101, technically M101_podcast. Our website, where all of our bits go up, is motorsport101.com, including written reviews of, well, it'll be all free by the time this goes out. Forgive me, it's been a little bit late getting this week's versions out. I did basically 10 out of the 10 out of 11 day streak on socials on Crash. I was a little bit behind. I've had a lack of time, unfortunately, but we get in there. By the time this goes out, everything from this past weekend, that's Formula One at Monaco, MotoGP at Ballaton Park, and IndyCar at Gateway will all be up by then. And of course, if you really, really like us, you can back us financially on Patreon, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. You can upgrade to the $10 tier to listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded, as Jason and Kira are doing so right now. Thank you very much for your ongoing support. It means the world, as always. Right, without further ado, let's get into 2026 Le Mans 24 preview.
And if you are listening, kids, if they're saying you can't have cake, the only alternative to cake at, what is this, 2:30 in the morning? No, it's not that.
This is our, what, this is the 94th running of Le Mans now?
That's the 94th running of these. We're going to get up to the 100th, not to be confused with the centenary. That was 3 years ago.
Indeed, yeah. Certain unfortunate global events did play a role in the in-between of that 100 years of history. You could probably guess what they were. Yes, this is the 94th running of Le Mans in 2026. I want to say 62 entrants total this year, Roger.
You got it. 62 of them, 25 in LMGT3, 19 of them in LMP2, and 18 of them in Hypercar. And the way I've laid this out, I want to start with the class that is no longer a regular part of the World Endurance Championship. It was before, but now it's not. It's LMP2.
They're in a weird place as well because they're not a fixture of the World Endurance Championship anymore, but we still break them out for Le Mans. Obviously, they still heavily feature over across the pond in IMSA. And we're getting a new car in a couple of years' time as well. I think it's 2028, I believe, right? So
that's the projected timeline for the next generation LMP2. We know that Orica will build a next generation LMP2 car. Surprise, surprise, all the cars in the field are Orica's. This generation was kind of one-sided, ain't it, to, I don't know, three, the other three manufacturers. We will never forget your service, Ligier, Dallara.
Thank you, Ligier.
Riley. Ligier will be back in the next generation, but that's that whole discussion of next gen LP2, that's a different topic for a different day. Now, the class is split into LP2, that's regular LMP2. You have to carry at least one silver graded driver. Remember, there's the whole bronze, silver, gold, platinum tier grade. And then there's LMP2 Pro-Am, which some people may be asking, I thought LMP2 was already a Pro-Am category. No. This really emphasizes the Am because bronze is the only true amateur classification. And you have to carry at least one minimum bronze driver in LMP2 Pro-Am. Last year, wild finish. Panis VDS Racing seemingly had this on lock until a suspension failure with about 30 minutes to go gave Air Europol competition a get out of jail free card after a late pit lane speeding penalty. Inter Europol competition gets its second win in 3 years at this event ahead of the Panis VDS car. And AO Racing with TF Sport as an LMP2 Pro-Am team finishing on the overall LMP2 podium. which is just kind of wild. I mean, I know Dane Cameron and Louis Deltraz are awesome drivers, no question about it, but damn, PJ was doing work. That's PJ Hyatt, owner and founder of AO Racing. Right. Dre, I told you to do some homework.
You did.
Find me a couple of cars in the entry list, and you could just, you don't even have to do like that level research. You could just go through a name on the list. It's like, ooh, I recognize that guy. I recognize that person in the car. Yeah. We just go through that.
I'm glad that RJ coddled me into basically saying, hey, pick a couple, two or three teams out of each of the minor categories. I don't want to just say minor categories.
Yeah, it's not minor categories, but we have, you know, we have a pecking order, and we're going to do the full breakdown for one class. And you can probably guess which one it is.
Indeed. And this was a game of a little bit of recognize the team, but I do know a little bit about this, mostly because there is a strong following for one team in particular that will be there. It's a Duquien team in the number 30. Let's just say there's a couple of fan favorites in that team, especially one Dorian Pan. You may know Dorian Pan, the Formula One Academy champion from 2025. There was a genuine push for her to have a single-seater career. I think the complicated, nuanced nature of the state of junior racing and where the F1 Academy fits into that was always going to go against her in that regard. That could be a half an hour podcast in of itself. We've talked about it on the show before. Find some more relevant episodes in our history if you want us to go into a bit more detail about that. But let's just say she's back where she probably belonged the whole time, which was being a really strong silver in sports cars. There's a good spot for her, and alongside her, two powerhouse drivers, Richard Vasseur, who spent, half a decade in Formula 2 on and off in total. He was always a really talented driver, one that was always capable of winning races in that series, but often lacks the funding to be able to call himself steady or stable for, you know, periods of time in junior motorsport. But he's always been really quick. It's a quick turnaround to him getting into sports cars, but I do find him a solid talent, an upper end of Formula 2 level talent, who sadly just didn't have the funding or opportunity for F1. And, well, the last man needs no introduction if you know your sports cars, especially if Eau Rouge is involved. Julian Andlauer, the Porsche Series driver over there from the hypercar class. He's going to be in LMP2, obviously, because Porsche, sadly, are no longer going to be featuring Le Mans as a full-time factory. So their drivers get to spread their wings. It's, you know, we've got some of the big hitters in this class, and Julian Andlauer is absolutely one of those people.
Yeah. Let's also cover off in brief the other Porsche factory drivers of note that will be competing in LMP2 in a world where there is no 963s in the race. Lauren Heinrich, who recently got confirmed to a full-time Porsche Penske deal in IMSA for 2027. He is at Algarve Pro Racing in the CrowdStrike Racing by APR car. That's running an LMP2 Pro-Am. Kevin Estra is driving for French team TDS Racing. It's his first time in a modern LMP2 car. In a lineup with him, Matthias Betsch, and Toby Shopify man, Ludka, a lineup that you will watch through the gaps in the finger in the between your fingers. Right. The other ones here, of course, we have Nico Müller, Porsche Formula E factory driver in the other Inter-Europol competition car. Not the one that won last year. It's the second team car. And we also have Harry King, not a factory LMP, not a factory hypercar driver, but a factory GT driver, factory contracted GT driver, stepping back up to LMP2 with Proton competition. Also sharing the spotlight with Honda factory driver Kakuno Shinoda. These kind of crossovers only happen in LMP2. Possibility there may be one more addition, but that is not my story to tell at the moment.
Great to see Kakuoto over there, by the way, because he's been ripping up Super Formula so far this year. This has been the year that RJ's got me to actually sit down and watch Super Formula, because he's been covering it you know, on and off for years as well. He's so good in that series. He's so fast. We've seen him briefly at Daytona as well, where it didn't quite work out for him over there due to complications with Acura. But if you've been watching Super Formula this year, you'll know that Kaku Ota is fast as all hell. Definitely want to keep an eye on over there, because I mean it's a good year for the series in general for British interest as well, because you've got Zach O'Sullivan and Luke Browning's been quick over there at times as well. So if you want to get into Super Formula, now's a pretty good year for it.
Yeah, right. Where were we? LMP2, right. I got one to watch because no, the Panis VDS racing team is not back this year. Instead, they've rebranded. They've got a new sponsor, Petit Forestier. This is now Forestier Racing by Panis. Olivier Panis is still involved. They still have two of the three drivers from last year, Oliver Gray and Esteban Mausson. They're now gold-level pros. They now welcome Luis Rossette, who is a former Andros Trophy racer, who's been climbing the ranks of sports cars up to LMP2. They won the first race of the ELMS season, and I've got to think they've got some unfinished business in this event.
Definitely. Another name that I pulled out of the list, and one you'll recognize if you're into F1 or IndyCar in general, the 22 United Autosports team. That is Zach Brown's United Autosports.
Richard Dean's United Autosport with an assist from Zach Brown from time to time. I know they are co-founders, but let's be real. Zach devotes a lot more attention to his new project than the one that got him the McLaren gig in the first place.
Yes, coming soon to a sports car world using very soon, actually. It'll be next year. But there was actually some clips a couple of days ago when it came out of them testing their new car for the first time at Imola. I can confirm it is extremely papaya. It's a plus. But Rasmus Linder, who you probably saw for a cup of coffee in Indy Next, he's come a long way since then. Gregoire Saucy and Mikkel Jensen, very, very strong international set of go-getters. I believe Gregoire Saucy's in the leading car over there at the European Le Mans Series right now. Just an overall very, very strong team. It's probably going to be my pick for the class win, actually, in the 22. So definitely one to watch, in my opinion. What about you, RJ?
Yeah. United Autosports won this event in 2024. That was the year in between the Inter-Europol victories in 2023 and 2025. In 23, it was an upset. 25, now that's the expectation. But I digress. United Autosports, always good. Winning for United Autosports at LMP2 can make your career, and in some respects, break it. But that's another story for another IndyCar episode. My other one to watch here is out of the LMP2 Pro-Am category, which I know it has a bronze mandate, and I know that's like an easy target for people to punch down at because people love punching down at bronze drivers when they make mistakes. But I got to say it, AO Racing by TF looks strong again. It's not Spike the Dragon. It is Rocky the Pegasus as part of an expanded branding deal with Mobile One. There's a new character joining the AO Racing cinematic universe. There's also been a last minute change that I will talk about a little bit more in Hypercar, but the long story of it is that Louis Delatraz has been called out of this ride. Australian driver James Allen, who you might know from winning that incredibly close Daytona 24 hours finish a couple years ago, he's been dropped into this car alongside PJ Hyatt and former Porsche Penske factory driver Dane Cameron. The two guys won last year. Remember, they finished third overall against all the teams that don't have bronze drivers. With a bronze driver, PJ Hyatt is super, super, super quick for his peers. I think they could pull off another good result, but it's all down to reliability. It's all about making sure that you are not the attrition that you need to get to the front of the field. And I have to say, LP2 generally pretty well behaved last year. We know the cars will hold up well. For a guy like Richard, for sure, this has got to be a breath of fresh air. That, like, yes, it's all one chassis, one engine make, but it's sensible. This is a category where the strength of the teams the mechanics, the engineers, the drivers, that all makes the difference. This is not a balance of performance formula. And as we get into the next few classes, balance of performance has become an interesting point of discourse in the World Endurance Championship. Stop me if you've heard this before.
Well, it's mostly a point of discourse because there isn't any discourse anymore because, well, the thing is that going into this year, the ACO, in their infinite wisdom, decided that we're not going to make the BOP public anymore, because I'm sure that will go down well with the people that always complained about said BOP.
That's right. The process is that each team gets to nominate two people, speak with the technical committee. The technical committee hands them these parameters and also gives them the documents, say, if you disclose this to the public, you are in breach of contract and you are in serious trouble, Buster. So there are the teams know what power and weight and energy they are running at, but that is not to be disclosed to the public until further notice. And I get it. It is not a fun thing to go through. Balance of performance discourse got incredibly toxic, and this is not the way to deal with it. I've been thinking about this. I've heard this float around, and tell me if this makes sense.
Sure.
I think what they could do, right? Because no matter whether it's the SRO way of we'll publish the balance of performance table, we'll make as many changes as we want it up to like hours before the race, whether it's the IMSA system where we'll publish the table, you're just not allowed to try and influence it through public statements, or it's this, you're not going to get away from that discourse, right? And it's just going to become more toxic because, fortunately, sports car racing is more popular now than it once was. But with that, there is a more toxic element. I call it the footballification of sports car racing, if you will. Anyway, where was I? Right. I think what they could do as a compromise to inform us, to help us inform the readers, they could publish this table after the race. They could publish it right at the start of the race, basically to a point where any balance of performance cannot be impacted by the running and practice qualifying. If you run it after the race, like, we're not going to know it in real time, but after the race, we have that information so we can go over that and be like, okay, so that informs why this car was so strong, why this result is so impressive, etc. I don't know about you. I think that would be a good halfway compromise. I get it. I don't like this way of doing things either.
It's a good natural bridge before we get into LMGT3, and I was going to bring this up anyway, but how about how you felt about it? Because this has certainly been a bit of a room splitter for a lot of people. I don't hate that. If you publish the table like at the end of the race or at the start of the race to maybe mitigate some of that discourse where it's like, here's what these cars were actually running after the fact, they can't change anything. I still don't think it's the most ideal way of doing it, but it would still certainly be better than what we have right now, where we just don't know what's going on and people are having to come up with really complicated tables and graphs where they attempt to guess it. Or let's just say it will only breed more of that toxicity, more of that conspiracy-based conversation about, hey, my manufacturer was allowed to run better than yours, and then we're all guessing because we don't get to see that table, or that we're hoping we get like a slip of a nugget of information from one of the team bosses or something along those lines to complain about.
You kind of got to guess through like body language, the way that some teams carry themselves throughout, let's say, scrutineering, practice, meet the teams, etc. Right? I don't particularly like it. I do also know that like there are instances where a power to rate ratio does not tell the full story of the race. It did, there would be several teams that have run less mature and unrefined cars at the maximum power that the window allows and the lowest weight that should be winning every single race that they have with these parameters and are not doing so.
No.
Not even close.
or even beyond a few years ago in the days of Glickenhaus. Even I remember those days and how they were given beyond the level of regulatory help that was in the rulebook, and it still didn't make them competitive. And at one point, their owner, cowboy hat and all, was threatening to suspend the series outright if he didn't get what he wanted. We've had it worse. Just a reminder.
I'll tell you what, as time goes on, I realized that Jim was not the worst, because the worst was sitting in the room right with him with a green car. Now let's talk about LMGC3. We have actual manufacturer participation, 9 manufacturers in total. They make wonderful GT3 cars, but this is LMGT3. This is the kind of special GT3 racing that you just can't find anywhere else. And you know what makes these cars so unique from anything else on the road?
What's that?
Special leader lights and Goodyear tires.
Oh.
they're actually a little bit below the pace of GT3 cars and other championships, but that's not why you come to watch LMGT3. You come for the competition. You come for the variety. It's the 18 full season cars from the World Endurance Championship, and we've invited 7 invitational entries from the European Le Mans Series, the Asian Le Mans Series. IMSA got an invite. The GT World Challenge Europe got an invite. 25 cars in total. Each team has a minimum of 1 bronze and 1 silver driver. And if you're looking for the Porsche participation, here it is. Manti and Porsche have won the last 2 Le Mans in LMGT3. The only 2 Le Mans in the LMGT3, remember? Because remember, this is still a very young class. GTE was only phased out in 2023. And no surprise that I think the number 92 Manti Porsche is going to be one to watch for the win. There are 2 Manti cars. They're both going to be in silver to celebrate the 75th anniversary of Porsche Motorsport, the 75th anniversary of Porsche's first entry into the race. Beautiful looking cars. I highlight this car because it has Richard Leitz in it. Richard Leitz in his 20th 24 Hours Le Mans. He's won the last 2. He's won his GT class 6 times. He's going for his 7th. That would put him in very rarefied air. How rarefied? Well, the only person that has more than 6 overall or class wins at Le Mans is a certain Danish guy named Tom Christensen, who won this race 9 times. So that's the kind of territory that Richard Leitz is trying to reach. He also has Ricardo Pera, with whom he won the race with in 2025. Excellent silver driver, so good that I'm surprised he doesn't have a full factory contract and a driver rating to match. And Yasser Shaheen, who won the race with Leitz in 2024, also with Manti. He had a year away from the team. Now he's back. I think it's doable. The only question mark is whether Yasser Shaheen is at his best early on in the race, because that's ultimately the hours in which he'll be driving. If he gets through that, his 2 co-drivers can just mow through the field.
Yeah, look, even I know from watching WEC and watching their other races on the calendar that Manti has been the gold standard of the LMGT3 class for a good couple of years now. They were always in the frame. They won the overall championship when I was covering them for Autosport alongside the wonderful Kevin Turner. And we got to talk about the POP, etc. You know who.
So fun fact, Gary Watkins was not the only person that that some of the staffers were like, they were trying to give him a different seat than the one they always had for 20 years. We also almost got moved to a different seat than the one we had for 20 years, man. Like, I appreciate many people's efforts. I'm not trying to throw anybody on the bus, but it's just like, maybe we can like find a compromise so we don't have to have these awkward discussions of just like, but you're trying to move us from the spot our publications have always had.
Which is just weird and silly. And like, I say this lovingly because I love Gary. I loved working with him over at Autosport. I've always talked about how fun he was to work with. Love Gaz, one of the finest sports car riders we have out there, and all around good egg. Did a lot to help us out over at Autosport when I was working there, sorting their audio out. But that's neither here nor there. I'm going to be real with you. I'm here for beef. And we have never, we never steer away from beef here on Motorsport 101. And there's always an opportunity here, because These two manufacturers can't help themselves. We've seen this at Daytona. We've seen it at Le Mans. We've seen them fight each other relentlessly. Of course, I'm talking about BMW versus Corvette. They can't help themselves. The last time I saw them in Bahrain, it was RB's O'Clock. And I've picked out two of their guys from there. I'm keeping an eye on the 32 and the 33, ironically. They're right next to each other on the entry list, too, because it just fits. Sometimes it just works, quite frankly. Yeah. WRT and the BMW M4. Darren Leung, Sean Galeo, who again was a very solid Formula 2 driver, is contended up to a very solid silver in sports cars. And Augusto Farfus, who is, you know, he's become the meme where they changed the decade number in the birthday cake.
He's been at BMW for 20 years, and lately all he's been known for is just getting into mess. Up until the most recent round at Spa-Francorchamps. And I'd love for him to break that trend. But sometimes the mess just has a way of finding him, or he has a way of finding the mess.
That man at Spa got pinballed. Like, we all blamed him for a big old smash into the Ferrari hypercar at Spa until we had to look at the replay again and realize he himself was hit from behind.
And you know why he was hit from behind? Because he was moving under braking, and that's why they penalized him in the incident.
Oh, of course. Mess.
I love Augusto. I love this dude. I'd love for him to change his ways. But, Dre, there's got to be another side of this beef, right?
Of course, and I mean, the one I've picked out is, again, another one of those fan favorite drivers that always rolls up at Le Mans every year in the 33 TF Sport Corvette. You know him, you love him. He buys Rolexes so the series itself doesn't have to. It's Big Ben Keating, one of the fastest bronzes of modern times. Starting to show his age a little bit, Ben, if we're being honest. I think some of that ridiculous bronze driver speed that he's had before is, I think, is starting to fade. There's a little bit more inconsistency in there. I think he's making a few more mistakes here and there, but he's still a very, very good bronze. Yeah. One of the better bronzes still in the field. And that always is precious to have at Le Mans or any other big endurance races alongside Johnny Edgar and the very dependable Nicky Katzberg as well in the 33. Yeah. A very strong team.
Interesting that Keating is coming off of an elbow injury he suffered while training. This is actually his first WEC race of the season, so it'll be interesting to see how he comes back. Vic, to your point, Keating always had a sweet spot in slightly more difficult cars than a GT3, because the GTEs that he used to drive did not have anti-lock brakes or a lot of driver assist. In fact, Keating was famously quoted as saying, "I'd never get back in one of these cars with all their driver assist," but hey, he can't resist the temptation of competing at Le Mans for too long. Nicky Katzberg, also your IMSA championship leader, and TF Sport got one of the Corvettes on the podium last year. I think there's every chance they could get one on the top step this year. I had another car to watch, and that is the number 150A, of course, of Ferrari, for no other reason than Lee Luadu is in the car alongside Custodio Toledo and Riccardo Agostini. Lee Lu, like Dorian Pan, could be the first woman to win her class at Le Mans since 1978. So it's been 48 years since a woman won a major class at Le Mans. That's overdue to change. It all depends on if Wadu has a car late in the race for her and Agostini to be able to finish it in, whelp the field. And of course, his full-time cars are also solid. One of them finished second overall. That's the one with Alessio Rivera at the top of the table. And I got to say, if you want my pick for an outsider, one of the non-WEC regulars to potentially pull an upset, stick your money on either of the Kessel cars. This is solid betting advice, folks. I know what I'm talking about.
He does. When it comes to sports cars, anyway, I do all the other betting stuff. I'm sharing the love briefly here, but yeah, Little Will Do is so good. Again, another high end silver. She's awesome, and it's a shame that the overall participation levels of women in this race and in sports car racing in general has taken a huge whack with the loss of Iron Dames. I want to say only two women in the field this year, RJ.
That's right. Dorian and Lilo sucks. Are the only ones. I mean, yeah, it's a bummer. I mean, there's other stories here. You've got Aston Martin with a solid entry. Mattia Drudi will be one to watch in the heart of racing cars. Ford has Logan Sargeant this year. Logan Sargeant's making his Le Mans debut, and he's probably got the most to prove out of any driver in the number 88 Mustang. Lexus is here, last go around for the RCF. McLaren is here, just won the last 6-hour race at Spa, but we know 24 hours is the big challenge for the 720S GT3. And Mercedes AMG is back after Hades froze over last year.
Indeed, and look, the McLarens, I watched them in Imola over in WEC, and I watched them over in Spa. The car is quick. It's very quick. It's always been the reliability that's held the McLaren back. If they can keep that car alive for the full distance, they certainly have the speed to win it outright. That's for damn sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think it's time we crack open the bottle and get to the top shelf.
Yep. Let's talk hypercar. We have 8 manufacturers, 18 cars in total, 17 full-time WEC participations, and the one wild card from our friends across the pond at IMSA. We'll get to them shortly. Last year was the third year in a row a Ferrari won, but it was the totally not a factory Ferrari, AF Corsa 83 squad, a very feel-good win for one Bobby Kubica alongside Phil Hansen and Henry Yaffe. A good fan if you're a fan of the modern yellow, so to speak. They were, a valiant effort from the number 6 Porsche. It totally didn't upset one Cameron Buckley that the number 6 had basically a perfect race and didn't win with Estra Vantor and Matt Campbell. And the number 51, my pick last year.
Yeah, this was the year that the streak broke.
We were this close. The 51 was leading with 3 hours to go until poor Alessandro Pierre Guidi made a mistake on pit entry and briefly beached his car in the gravel alongside James Collado and Jesus impersonator Antonio Giovinazzi. In the 51.
He's got close crop hair now. He can't be the Jesus impersonator.
He's too quick now. The thing is, he shaved his hair and he got quicker. I mean, it's understandable, but it's not as fun.
Right. So I figure we do this in alphabetical order this time. I could have gone through the WEC standings as they were, but I really just felt like going through alphabetical order. We're going to start with the team that will not be here for long. That's Alpine Endurance Team with its two A424s. The last time you'll see these cars in hypercar in this current guise. French team Signatec Racing runs the operation. 35 car has Antonio Felix da Costa, Ferdinand Habsburg, and Charles Malesi, whose best finish was fourth at Imola to start the year. The 36 has Frederick Makowiecki, Jules Union, and Victor Martins, who is the only Le Mans rookie who's making his debut straight into the hypercar category. They have two 11th place finishes on the season. This is a weird one for me because I saw the debut of this program. I saw the inevitable discussion points of using the engine that is currently used in the Formula 2 car as it currently is. Now, of course, what they can do is they can change it to take out all the bits that don't work and replace them with ones that work better. They got their first win in WEC last year at Fuji. They also had a quiet race where, yes, they finished, but they weren't really a competitive factor. And now, just as they're starting to turn the corner, Alpine's announced that it's pulling out of the hypercar class. Now, there's been all these rumors swirling that this program could be acquired by a Chinese manufacturer. BYD is the leading candidate, but there's nothing concrete to suggest that that is anything close to a done deal. So we're just going to treat it like this is the last time that Alpine has a chance to win this race for the first time since 1978.
Yeah, this is, as a side note, it is worth pointing out that this is China starting to put their foot on the accelerator pedal when it comes to overall motorsports influence. We've talked a little bit about it on our biking episodes of Motorsport 101 across the pond, that Chinese manufacturers are making a lot of money across that side of the pond in Asia, and they're now starting to hit Europe, the UK, Italy, Spain, etc. There was rumours also swirling around in the land of Formula One a couple of weeks ago that maybe they're thinking about a Formula One entry. Their co-owners have made it very clear that they want to put their technology to the test. Motorsport is the ultimate test for them, and potentially a return of everybody's favorite team principal panto villain, Christian Horner. So nothing concrete over there yet either. They've only just dipped their toes in the water in terms of biking entries, like they're taking part in World Supersport and the new World Sport Bike Championship over there in the World Superbike Support Ladder. But there is money in the back. If they really want to go for this, they more than have the resources. I am personally of the opinion that I hope this happens, if for no other reason than it would save Viri, who have 400 people working in that factory, which as of right now is in the process of being shut down. Yeah. They've spoken out vocally against the direction that Alpine has gone in. Their new CEO is just vehemently anti-motorsport, which sucks. They're all in for Formula One, and even then they're thinking about getting new owners over there too. The Otro Capital quarter of that Alpine F1 team is up for sale as we speak. Alpine's in a weird place as an overall company right now.
No doubt about it.
As the modern branch of what we call Renault. They're in a very weird place right now. Talking about the cars themselves, this is a factory team that was genuinely going in the right direction. And, you know, they've got good drivers. I'm a huge Charles Milesi guy. Very, very fast in Alpine. And I know Gary Watkins was putting him high up in the Autosport Top 50 as well. For that very reason, that they have the talent to win any race on paper. Like, the talent behind the wheel is not the issue. It's always been the mechachrome jokes and what have you. But those jokes have largely ended because they're competitive now. And they can certainly, I think it would still be a minor upset if they won Le Mans, but it's not the upset it would have been 2 or 3 years ago. That's for damn sure.
Oh, my God. And we have two French manufacturers. Only one of them has a partial stake from the French government in it, and it's this one. There will be people going crazy in the streets. They'd be going crazy for the other French manufacturer as well. There's no doubt about it. Just a quick note here. DaCosta, Habsburg, Malesi, all those drivers in the 35 car of Juan Lama, they've wanted it in LMP2. Makowiecki won it in GT Pro back in the days when he was with Porsche. And I just got to think, because we talked about this recently, you know what's sad about the fact that Mick Schumacher just didn't enjoy his time in World Endurance Championship that much?
What was that?
He was really good at this.
He was. And let's rip the band-aid off to a degree. It wasn't exactly a closed secret that Mick didn't enjoy his time in WEC. There were multiple fan accounts and independent content creators that were all saying this as well. It was an open secret that Mick did not enjoy his time in WEC.
How do you are you so good at something you cannot stand?
I don't know. I mean, there's debates about how professional an attitude that is when you're telling fans that you hate your job, but you were still really good at it, despite that fact. I mean, got a podium at Spa last year in that 36 car. And I feel it's not nice. It's not nice to have to cover and say those things, because You'd hope that people that are in a racing series you enjoy genuinely enjoy it, because that's where the passion and that's where the support comes from.
I wonder what's going to become of Victor Martins this year, because this is kind of a one done deal for him. Victor Martins just perpetually unlucky. We know he's good, and if Alpine didn't think it was good, they wouldn't have put in one of these cars, brought him back into the Alpine Academy fold, as it were. It's a weird case of Alpine Academy common success. Wait for him to see what he does in this race. Jules Gagnon doesn't have a Le Mans win, but it's not for a lack of more for a lack of opportunities than anything. Like, I think he's taken a hypercar very well. There's a lot of talent on this driver roster. It's just a matter of what result are we going to get. I wouldn't fancy them for a win going out, but man, it would be kind of cool if they did.
It would be a great story. And a quick shout out to Victor Martins, who, again, as RJ alluded to, perpetually unlucky in Formula 2. He was a very, very good Formula 2 driver. A couple of years ago, I thought he could be a genuine Alpine F1 driver, and it just didn't work out for him in the rolling lottery that is Formula 2 nowadays. He just got a little bit too old. The brighter prospects came along. That typically is the pattern in Formula 2. If you're not winning in 2 years, good luck to you. Basically, at that point, even the second year can still be a death sentence for certain people. That's how tough it is now to break out in that series. I mean, we're looking at Leonardo Fornaroli right now, who did the F3, F2 double in back-to-back years. And we're celebrating him getting an FP1 at McLaren this weekend over there at Barcelona, so, which, again, kind of says it all about where we're at. Victor Martins is a great driver, and I think he would have had a great permanent home in the World Endurance Championship. I sincerely hope he lands on his feet next year, because, again, Alpine is just scaling back everything, and that's probably not the place you want to be right now.
Right. Now let's go and ask Aston Martin. Oh, no, the F1 people are tuning out. Don't worry. This is the one that, while it hasn't really delivered the results, this one at least has charisma. This is Aston Martin, the heart of racing team. What does the heart of racing stand for? Thor, fielding the Valkyrie hypercar. Thor, Valkyrie, get it? Mythology. Yeah. It's awesome. And the 007
bring me Thanos.
I like that the 007 car still has all British drivers. It's Harry Tinknell, Tom Gamble, and Ross Gunn. They were ninth at Imola and fourth at Spa. Really good start to the season for them. 009 is Alex Riparas, Marco Sortensen, and Roman De Angelis, who have been unlucky this year, including a DNF at Spa where they were having a good race and then they had an accident with a 35 Alpine. Not great, but
no, because there was very aggressively blocking that day, shall we say. I'll be kind and say it was a aggressive block that led to the number 9 being put in the wall and having they were running sixth at that point when 009. They were wiped out. Yeah, just really unfortunate.
Yeah. So this is the second Le Mans for the Valkyrie. This is the V12 car that has the funky styling, the strange ground effect tunnels that everybody loves, and that engine sound. Expectations were pretty low last year going into the first Le Mans because they had some troubles in the very first race. They had some troubles at Daytona and Sebring early this year. But I have to say, both cars finished. That's some minor issues, but nothing race-ending. And they could really use another good result like this. And I'll tell you, for what it's worth, one of these cars was the fastest car on test day. I do need to couch this, though. That was on a soft tire run. Remember, hypercar, you get three compounds of tires, soft, medium, and hard. They have color scales just like in Formula 1, only the colors don't match up like in Formula 1. But they did it on soft tires. Most of the other cars did it on medium, so I don't think you'd fancy them as like front runners for the win. Let's just say, I think if they get both cars in the top 10 in this race and therefore score World Endurance Championship points, I think that's a solid step up.
I think it is too. I think a lot of people still need to park any idea about them being involved for outright victory or anything like that. I think that's asking an awful lot of the Aston Martin crews at this point. I think this would be where we would roll out the potential man meme if we were doing a video version of this podcast, because I've seen what on a really good day they can challenge for podiums. And I saw Ross Gunn drive the nuts off this car at Road Atlanta last year, where he was, you know, really high up the B pillar index, because who doesn't love a good B pillar, a PDF. You could see glimpses of what this car can do.
Yeah.
But it's nowhere near a regular thing yet. I think It's if this was a rack of ribs, you would say more seasoning than back in the oven for an hour.
And you know what? They admit that. This was the only car that races full-time in IMSA that didn't get a significant Evo Joker upgrade package because by their own admission, they're just trying to understand how the current car works before they try and put upgrades and updates on the car before they know how to make the current package work. So to that extent, like, I totally get where they're coming from there. It does have its pronounced issues, particularly on bumpy tracks, but Le Mans is relatively smooth, relatively low tire deg. That might help them out. I mean, driving talent, again, not the problem here. Eric Tinknell's won Le Mans twice in two different classes. Sorensen won in GTAM a couple of years ago. All these guys on the Aston Martin Thor team roster are recent standouts of the factory or factory blessed GT3 programs, and they made that change very, very well. One note here about Ross Gunn and Roman De Angelis: first starts of the year in the World Endurance Championship because of the many jugglings of the wet calendar, thanks to current events. They couldn't be at Imola because they were racing at Long Beach, and they couldn't be at Spa because it's a 6-hour race and you don't really need them.
Yeah, you normally only take two for those smaller wet grounds rather than a three-person roster. So, yeah, their first starts of the year, again, driving talent, not the issue in this factory at all. It's more just reliability. And look, this is a mature approach from Aston Martin. Unlike their Formula One team, this team is more in the case of let's figure out how we can walk before we can run. It says to me they're in it for the long haul, and it says to me that they are keeping expectations low while they try and figure this out, and I think that's the right way to be.
And you know why that is because Ian James, team principal, himself a racing driver, actually going to be driving in this race while he is also team principal this whole project. Like, he has a mature head on his shoulders, and I wish more people the F1 team did the same. Talking about potential men cars, are we finally starting to see the best of BMW in the World Endurance Championship? Because BMW team WRT, if you hadn't heard the news, 1-2 at the 6 hours of Spa. Kevin Magnussen, Raffaele Marcello, and Dries Van Tour finished second behind the winning cars of Robin Frins, René Rast, and Sheldon Vanderlinde. And because of those aforementioned calendar crashes, Robin Frins and René Rast entered this race as the current Hypercar World Championship points leaders. What a time to be alive, dog.
I mean, we watched that race in Spa in this very server, and yeah, their first ever win in the World Endurance Championship as we know it. I think their first win as an overall manufacturer, I want to say, since 2002.
It would have been since the V12 LMR days.
Oh yeah, like, yes, that car from Gran Turismo, as we often joke about on this show. Look. This is the definition of a potential man. And we've said this for a few years. The BMW's outright speed has never been the issue. It is, on its day, the fastest outright package of them all. It helps when you have Dries Van Tor, who, again, when he's on it, probably top two or three just outright fastest drivers in sports cars. Yeah. He can rip it. We all know what he can do. He's a Jofra Archer type over in cricket. He's a Mark Wood, a guy that can bowl at 95 miles an hour, but sometimes is a bit brittle. Sometimes the mistakes creep in. Sometimes it's just not his day and he will get cartoon anviled. It's the nature of BMW sometimes. You're waiting for the anvil to fall. But it seems, and I was going to make this point before you made it on our notes here, the Evo package they've brought to this car has seemingly made them a bit more versatile, a bit more operationally helpful, because BMW the last couple of years, it's more been a case of the outright speed is there, but if they have to double or triple stint a tire run, that's when the problems typically start. They get knocked out of their window, and then they start hemorrhaging time. Yeah. Hasn't been the case so far this year by the looks of it.
Not really. I mean, even in Imola, their cars were fifth and seventh. I mean, that's a better start to the season than they had the last couple of years. I mean, they put a lot of effort in this aero package. Yes, I know it doesn't have the comically large nostrils on it anymore, but it's not just to make the car, you know, it's not just for cosmetic effect. They wanted the car to be more balanced. They want the car to have better correlation because Zevo kits are not to add another 2 seconds of pace. We know why they can't do that. This is a balance of performance formula. The days of LMP1 upgrades are done. But that operating window, when you do have balance of performance, good or bad, that's very important. They needed that. They've got it. And this is a team that has won LMP2 at Le Mans before. Friends won it with them in 2021. Dries Van Thor won his class on its debut in 2017, and that wasn't even in a BMW. That wasn't even in an Audi back when he was an Audi factory driver. And I'll say this, they weren't really high up the testing leaderboard. They did do a lot of laps compared to everybody else. And this is becoming a very, very favorable sleeper pick to the point where I don't even know if it's a sleeper pick anymore.
I don't think it is anymore. I think they're in the elite tier of teams that can win this race. There's not many, but I think if everything goes their way, there's no reason they can't win this race now. Spa was the proof of concept coming true. That everything came up their way, and they were able to win it, and not just win it, they won to it. And again, we don't know what the BOP is going to look like. It may have been the wrong time for them to win. If there is such a thing as a bad time to get your first ever win in the World Endurance Championship. But the talent is there. The chaos is there. The speed is there. And the potential is there. Will it actually land on the day? We'll have to wait and see. But there is no reason why this factory can't win anymore.
Absolutely. Now, BMW is one of the LMDH manufacturers that is trying to crack that very soft, subtle glass ceiling that's been put over their head by Ferrari these last few years. Another one of those teams is Cadillac, another one of those manufacturers, I should say, because it's an effort made up of two teams. So Cadillac Hertz Team Jota represents Cadillac in the World Endurance Championship. Wayne Taylor Racing also represents Cadillac in IMSA. So they combine to put together three-car entry. Cadillac Team Jota has the number 38 of Sebastian Bourdais, Earl Bamber, and Jack Aitken, and the number 12 of Will Stevens, Norman Nato, and Alex Lynn's name was here, but because of neck surgery recovery, he's been scratched out in Louis Delatraz, who was in the LMP2 Pro-Am winning car last year, has suddenly been bumped up a class. And Wayne Taylor Racing, of course, has Ricky and Jordan, the Taylor brothers, and Felipe Albuquerque. This is the aforementioned IMSA wildcard. And I got to say, Dre, when I look at these two entries and I look at the rest of their body of work this year, although it is still the early days, it hasn't been all that great.
We've often had to crack jokes on our Discord server about how much up the shitter it's been for Wayne Taylor Racing in recent times. This is not the WTR of 3 or 4 years ago where they were putting boots to arses on a regular basis over in IMSA and they were seen as the gold standard of the teams over there. It's been rough lately, and a combination of Porsche flatlining them a little bit over there across the pond before heavy BOP adjustments were made over in IMSA. And even then, they've not been winning. It's been other Cadillacs that have come through and come out on top. We just saw it over IMSA recently with Detroit, and that was a dominant win for one of their neighbors, and that was Jack Aitken over in the 38 team alongside Earl Bamber. If you're going to pick a caddy, you're probably picking the 38, let's be frank, given the adjustments and given all that around them. Again, driving talent's not the issue here. The Taylor brothers are great sports car drivers. Felipe Albuquerque's been a top-end veteran for well over a decade. That's not the issue. It's the operation side of it that has got me concerned.
To that point, though, it's not been much better at Jota this year. Their two cars, who, let's not forget, got Cadillac the first win with a 1-2 finish at Sao Paulo. Had three pole positions all in the year, all of them via Alex Lynn, who is still hurt, but Cadillac, you think, has enough depth to replace him. So far in the first two races, the best they've combined for is eighth. And by comparison, Ricky and Felipe Albuquerque just got their first podium of the year with a third place in Detroit. That looks like a really good result compared to what Jota's posted this year. And we know that they have adapted to the V Series R a lot quicker than Wayne Taylor Racing has. So it's very perplexing the state that Cadillac is in. You don't expect this to last. This was the manufacturer that won the pole position and was rightly disappointed that they only converted it into a fourth and seventh place finish for their two cars. Bamber's won this race twice overall. Bourdais, Stevens, Jordan, Felipe all have class wins here. It's got to start coming good at this event, though. They've got
really
to have before, back when it was Cadillac Chip Ganassi Racing, so we know that that potential is there.
They've certainly got the potential for it. They've got the talent for it. I'm gutted that Alex Polo isn't here because he ripped this race up last year as well. In the
2 years ago.
2 years ago. It feels like it was yesterday where he was a top 10 B-pillar guy on debut for Cadillac, and we're like, oh my God, he really is this good. And, you know, upgrade him from elite talent to generational. But it feels like they've been in no man's land in WEC and recently, because it's like, again, we can only guess what the BOP is, but everybody knew last year when they won their first race at Sao Paulo that, let's be frank, they got the good end of that deal when they won that first race.
Gotta love that Sao Paulo doesn't have a lot of zones over 200 kilometers per hour for most of the lap, I'd say. Mm-hmm. And to the point, and there is one point to make about this, is that, yes, they could have brought Action Express Racing instead of Wayne Taylor Racing. But if you look at Action Express's roster, you'll notice, oh, they're already occupied at Jota this year. There's been some thought to whether maybe it could be like a collaborative entry, but we've already crossed this bridge. Wayne Taylor Racing expects to be stronger this year. And again, for what little it's worth, Cadillac had some good times in test day, and those were on medium compound tires, which is a bit more representative. Is that indicative of anything going into this week? I don't know.
Who's to say? Who's to say? It might be something. It might be a red herring. We expect more from Cadillac at this point. There's no getting around that. And I think that's why we're just down on them and have been for the last year and change now. Maybe this is the one that gives them a jump start, but given what we've seen in WEC so far, I think they are in the long shot category for me personally.
Titletown, next, AF Corsa, Ferrari AF Corsa. The factory cars are in red. The satellite cars in yellow. It's all three of the most recent LM24 winners, all in the same cars that they've won with over the years. The 50 is Antonio Fuoco, Nicholas Nielsen, Miguel Molina. They won in 2024. The 51 is Alessandro Pierguidi, James Collado, and Antonio Giovinazzi. They won in 2023. And the 83 is Robert Kubica, Ye Yafe, and Philip Hansen, who won last year. What have they done since in 2026? Well, a couple podiums. DNF at Spa. Remember that Farfus incident we talked about earlier? That wiped out the 51. And I've got to say, and I know that they kind of bluffed their way through this last year, but there's a more concrete feeling going in that coming out of scrutineering that maybe this may not be their year.
It feels maybe like the field has caught up to them a little bit. The general feeling and sentiment that we got last year was that they had the rub of the green with the ACO for the Le Mans wins, where it felt like Porsche had a perfect race and they weren't rewarded for it because Ferrari was so good it didn't matter. I don't think it's quite that, but the overriding gut feeling that people is going around is that either Ferrari have low-key had their wings clipped a little bit and we don't know it yet, or this is another really clever Ferrari cover-up job. They get to Le Mans and then they're going to end up turning it up and then curb stomping everybody. I don't, and to be fair, I'm with you, RJ. I'm leaning more towards the former on this one. I just think the field's caught them up a bit.
Yeah, they've caught them up a bit. There were no significant upgrades to the car this year. They put a lot of work into developing the 499 P2. Despite all we've said, if you're in denial that the 499P had matured into the best all-around car in the grid, you're just a hater. And there's nothing wrong with just being a hater, but I wish some people would be more honest about it. But that's sure. Neither here nor there. They haven't had to really change anything in terms of the setup of the team, right? The only real thing that's different is now that all the hypercars are homologated in the same wind tunnel instead of, oh, if you're an IMSA, you go to the wind shear, you go to one wind tunnel in North Carolina. And if you do it, if you you go to the Sauber wind tunnel for some of these, now they're all now they're all going through the same wind tunnel for all this data. So it's just like, it's no real major evolution as you've seen with some of the other cars and some that we'll talk about later. It's still a really good car. This is still a really good team. You'd be foolish to bet against the factory Ferraris in this race because they were close in Imola. They were close at Spa. This is still what people expect the Ferrari F1 team to be.
Look, this has been the Ferrari side of the brand that hasn't let people down in the last few years. Ferrari has executed generally excellently. It's a well-oiled machine. There's a reason why all nine of their drivers have been retained in their respective slots with no real reason to have a dramatic shift. Although I'm calling you out, O'Connell, because it says here on my notes, brackets, let's stir up Ferrari internal politics. Spill.
There has been a bit of a gap in the results between the factory car and the satellite car. Now, what your how you view the 83 Ferrari is really up to you. You can say this is a full factory car with just a different paint job, and they're trying to pass it off as a privateer when it's clearly as good as all the others and gets all the love and respect. Robert Kubica's remarks towards the end of the season when he felt frustrated that his lead was slipping and all the factory cars were starting to get by him, I think told a different story that, well, yes, this is a car that benefits from a lot of good resources and its drivers are spectacular. Maybe they would have liked it better if the red car had won last year.
There was always a sort of back of the head feeling about this where it's like, is the AF Corsa actually the factory team? Is it actually something you're proud or happy with? Or is it just the black sheep of the family?
Like Ferrari will happily take another Le Mans win to get closer to Porsche. By the way, don't bring an underweight car to qualifying and make your job a lot harder come race day. But in terms of the long game of the championship, it feels like a lot will have to go right for the 83 to win this race again. I think they caught lightning in a bottle last year.
Maybe so.
I don't know if they have another one of those left in them. I don't know. Circumstances could mean that the 83 car is Ferrari's only chance to win Le Mans, and this entire conversation is rendered pointless.
It's a big old question because it's just because, again, we don't know the BOP. We just, and Ferrari have played these games before where they've played possum to a degree. We don't really know what they are until they actually run them on race day. And that's going to be one of the bigger question marks going into this race. We'll know a lot more about how this Ferrari team is really getting down after the weekend, I suspect.
Yeah, probably as soon as like 12 hours from now as we're recording. I don't know. Let's talk about something new. Let's talk about the Le Mans debut of Genesis Magma Racing. The first serious entry from a Korean automaker into the top class of Le Mans. Songyang entered like 30 years ago, but that was that. That's not this. This is a proper serious entry with a chassis supplied by Orica, with a WRC-derived turbocharged V8 engine, and they painted the car orange for Le Mans. Who doesn't love that? In the 17 GMR 001, it's Andre Lotter, three-time Le Mans winner and legend, Pipo Durrani, and Mathis Jalbert, who brought home the team's first points at Spa with an eighth-place finish. They also have the number 19 car of Matthew Jaminet, formerly of Porsche, Paul-Loup Chatin, formerly of Alpine, and Danny Yukadea, formerly of Mercedes-Benz, although he still drives Mercedes. It's complicated. Yet score points. But to be fair, it's a first-year project. What is the reasonable expectation for them in their first year?
Finish. I've said this 100 times over. This is four times the length of any other wet race. You will be tested. Like, it's a 6-hour race is not a 24-hour race. And Le Mans provides unique challenges that a lot of the other tracks on the calendar don't do. They're not attacking IMSA yet. They've made it very clear today, actually. Cyril Abitbol, who runs the team, actually went out on the record and said, we're not doing IMSA until, I think, 2028 at the earliest.
That's right.
Due to the questionable state of the series, now that we know that Acura will be leaving them at the end of this year. So they've got to go all in on WEC. I am of the opinion that just finishing the race with both cars would be a decent achievement in of its own right. They got points at Spa. It was a little bit fortunate given a lot of the chaos that went on around them. A couple of big hitters didn't finish that race. They're not slow. They're certainly competitive in this field. I think they're solid midfielders at their best. But let's not put them in the conversation for an outright victory. If getting points, would be a bonus for them.
It's a long-term project. Yeah, it's a long-term project and a way for guys like Lotter and Durrani to add to their legacies, because like Lotter's got three Le Mans wins. If this last act as a top-class driver is to help to start to build this into a competitive program from basically scratch, then like that's another key piece in his legacy. Pipo Durrani, we talked about how good he was with Extreme Speed and then with Cadillac. To do this again with Genesis after a year out of racing entirely would be huge.
Mm-hmm.
They did most of the development of this car for over a year, and it was an interesting point that was brought up. Would it have made sense to put them in separate cars? I did actually ask Pipo this.
Oh, yeah.
And he told me that because it was under consideration, but because him and Andre were getting on so well, they decided to put them in the same car, which normally is not a bad thing. And like the drivers of the 19 car are all very well and good, but they came to the project so late that they've barely had time in the car before the start of the season. Now, again, guys like Jaminet and Chatin and Yukadea, they're consummate pros. I don't doubt that they can adapt quickly, but that's just something that it was on the mind of at least one person going into the start of the season, that maybe a different driver lineup would have been beneficial. I don't know, man.
It's interesting. I don't think it's a coincidence that the 17 got the better results so far in the World Endurance Championship so far this season. I think spreading the experience out would have, to hedge your bets a little bit more, probably made sense. I don't know, and I don't think anybody can quantify what team chemistry is worth in the sense of this is a team sport. It's not like single-seater racing or other individual motorsports. You're all there to help each other, open feedback. You know, you're having conversations. That's worth something. How much, I don't know. What sort of value you put on that, I don't know. It's hard to say. I can understand both sides of the aisle when it comes to that argument. If you want that team chemistry, you put Durrani and Lotter together, but also how much faith do you have in the newcomers coming in that have got to learn this car quickly for the biggest race of the year? That's risky in of its own right. And don't get me wrong, that's not, as you said, that's not a down talk of the drivers. Jaminet, Chatan, and Danny Jinkadella are great drivers in their own right. They will do a job, and they will do it with the best of their ability. It's just, it was a valid question, and I'm glad Durrani treated it as such, because I think it is valid, and it's something that that has been thought about internally. So I'm glad that it's been at least acknowledged.
Yeah, for sure. I think a lot of cautious optimism around Genesis as it attacks its first Le Mans. The cars look great.
They do look great.
They've got
love good the orange. People
on, yeah, love the orange. We need a bit more variety on the grid, because the Netz team is not giving us to them, because it's monochrome and red at Peugeot Sport. Total Energies to be at SAC. But this is a fascinating team, right? So the 93 of Paul DiResta, Stoffel Vandoorne, and Nick Cassidy was seventh at Spa, which was a good result. The 94 of Loic Duval, 2013 winner, Malte Jakobsen, and Theo Pourchaire was running really good at Spa until they had an accident with the GT car in a race where they won pole position. This has kind of been a microcosm of Peugeot in this era since the 918.
Chaos.
The 988, I should say. Peugeot 988. This era has been strange. It's been chaotic. They've had no wings. They've had wings. They've had opportunities to win races that have gone missing. The car has occasionally been brilliant here. Remember 2023 in the wet when Gustavo Menezes of many generations ago, it seems like, drove this car to the lead, and all anybody remembers of how it ended when he got in that accident and threw the car up the road?
Yeah. The car
this has been kind of chaotic.
You never quite know what you're going to get with Peugeot. It's the Forrest Gump box of chocolates of the hypercar class, where, again, on paper, the talent is there. There's a lot of fun drivers in this lineup. There's a lot of guys that these are drivers that have maybe not had the full flowers of how good they are else. In fact, I think they're the definition of that. Paul DiResta was a very solid F1 driver when he was over there a decade ago. I stand by that to this day. Hard to believe that that was nearly 15 years ago now that Paul DiResta was in Formula 1 and he's still going. Stoffel Vandoorne, we all know he was screwed in Formula 1. That was a S-tier level prospect that was in the wrong place at the wrong time at McLaren. And Nick Cassidy is one of the best Formula E drivers of the modern age. I stand by that. He's a bona fide race winner.
He was ours in Super GT and Super Formula first, pal. Don't you forget it.
He was.
Talking about guys that got a raw deal up in their career, can I just say I'm so glad that Theo Pourchaire has a full factory seat where he is being paid as a professional to drive a race car. I know it's with Peugeot. I know this has been with banter team, but like that level of security has to be so freeing. And I gotta say, it's done all right here so far.
He's been solid. And as a small side note, I fully agree that Theo Pourchaire, let's not forget, at one point was the youngest Formula 2 feature race winner in series history, and he did it at Monaco of all places as well. And Fred Vasseur, I thought, was a bigger believer in young talent. He had the opportunity to put Theo Pourchaire in Formula One and elected not to. He's always been the guy that everybody passes over, Pourchaire, and I'm so glad that Peugeot has revitalized his career, because there was a hot minute where I thought this was just never going to work out for Theo, whether it be on the road to F1, whether it be the cup of coffee he had in IndyCar, which was awful for other non-on-track reasons, unfortunately, or over in Japan with Super Formula, where he was there for an even smaller cup of coffee. So I'm delighted he's got an opportunity to prove himself in the World Endurance Championship. Yeah, it's not the most ideal factory in the world, but there are a factory that can, on its day, surprise people. And that's fun. And it's for what it's worth as well, Malfi Jacobson is fast as hell.
Oh, like, my God, dude.
He is like, so quick.
I joke that he is, like, so heavily glazed at our publication. Lovingly love the dude. He's so fast. It's entirely justified. This 94 car could easily do some damage, but this is another car that has shown those flashes of brilliance, but never anything of substance, because what do they follow up leading the race in 2023 with? Dud in 2024, dud in 2025. Peugeot hasn't won this race since the days of the 908 back in 2009. Mm. I think that's something that they are very, very eager to change. Oh my God, it's such a weapon, right? I know nobody loves, like, oh, the diesel car sounds so quiet, but that one looks so good. I'm amazed it only won once. Loic Duval, again, another case of a guy who just wants to extend his legacy with another manufacturer because, God, he's getting up there in years, frighteningly quick before our eyes. I hope that this year Peugeot starts to turn a corner at Le Mans, because I'll say this. They've always been the one manufacturer who, if you were to say anybody could quit right now, who would it be? Everybody says Peugeot. And yet, the indication that I get is that they're in this for the long haul. They're willing to wait this out for the to get the results that they want. It's evidenced by the fact that it is likely that this will be the last race for the 988 as a concept, that they'll bring something new to the table next year. And I'm excited to see that.
I'm just glad they're still here, because Peugeot are tied with this race, especially in the modern age. I've joked before about my fandom of GT4 and the LMP1 category, and Peugeot being such a heavy hitter, the Pescarolo era, where they were running alongside them as well. Le Mans is more fun with Peugeot being there, and I'm glad they're here. I remember the rainbow livery they had a couple of years ago as well. That would bring that shit back, Peugeot, for God's sake. Yeah. But they are... You're so right in that they were always the team you would go, if there's going to be a quitter, it's them. And they're not, and they're still here, and they're pouring money into this, and they want to win, and they have the great attitude for it.
Yeah.
I just hope it can translate into some more meaningful results soon.
I mean, it's part of Stellantis, dog. Everything's chaotic at that company.
Ugh.
Right? They could have the right attitude, and the board could still be like, right under them at any moment. I don't think they will this time. I think they're going to stay. Which brings us to the one ever present in the WEC era since 2012 when they first showed up. Toyota, not Gazoo, Toyota Racing. It's the number 7 car.
What was the point of that rebrand again?
I'm still trying to figure it out myself, and it's been several months since the rebrand. But nonetheless, Mike Conway, Kamui Kobayashi, and Nick DeVries are back in car number 7. Conway and Kobayashi won it together in 2021. Sebastian Buemi has won this race 4 times. Brendan Hartley's won this race 3 times. Ryo Hirakawa's run it in 2022, and they're all together in the number 8 car that won at Imola ahead of the number 7 car, which was finished 3rd in that race. I'm going to say it. It's been 10 years since the greatest infliction of the so-called curse of the Toyota 7.
Oh.
You remember where you were when the power went out. This is hands down the best chance they've had to win this race since 2023. And to win this race and finally get rid of the yeah buts. Yeah, but they didn't beat Audi and Porsche in the LMP1 days. Yeah, but they only beat a bunch of privateers. Yeah, but they haven't won this since all the competition came back. No. I think this is the year for them to do it. I don't know if they're going to be my picnic, let's just say, but this is the best chance they've had to do it, because they finally decided to take a car that was good at the start of this era, very good at the start of this era, but was starting to show its age. They heavily revamped it. They renamed it, of course. It now looks like something that is properly of its time. It is drastically overhauled. I think the way they even drive it now, they have to take the curbs less because the suspension is just that much more stiff and potent than it was last year, where you could just ride the curbs all the time. That's how you gain speed. Anyway, this is a more modern, advanced design. It's given them a wider operating window. Showed an Imola as well. It probably could have won at Spa if not for them getting hosed on strategy. I think this looks like a really good chance for Toyota to get back on top.
They are the entry, in my opinion, that I think there are the least amount of question marks about. Ferrari are so up in the air going into this year's Le Mans. And again, with all the BOP talk and conversations, what we don't know. There's one thing we do know about Toyota and how the ACO looks at them. Whenever they do well, the ACO shits themselves because they immediately throw a hammer at them and they clip them for the better part of a full season. They are so shit scared of letting Toyota run at full chat.
I will say this, though. Remember back in 2018 when your good friend Gary Watkins read that headline that said the ACO has the right to penalize other teams for going quicker than Toyota? Man, times changed since Alonso was in the series in 2018. And that's one thing that I always bring up, right? Right.
Oh, yeah.
But it's always been this kind of give and take because Toyota's been so loyal to the championship. Remember, they were the ones that didn't quit when Dieselgate blew up Audi and by extension Porsche the first time around, right?
Right.
And they've always had a good team that, let's be honest, it fell behind operationally, too. That's yes. Another big thing. They got a little bit sloppy. They got a little bit complacent. But this feels like a team that's rejuvenated. Sebastian Buemi told me during scrutineering, the feeling was he's excited, a little bit more than excited, actually, for him to potentially get a fifth Le Mans win and shake off all the asterisks in the qualifiers would be so awesome. He wants to win this race. Everybody at this team wants to win this race. And I got to think as well, when I look at these two driver lineups, is this the band's last tour as we know it? Because Nyck de Vries has been rumored to be moving. Brandon Hartley's been rumored to be moving. Mike Conway's been rumored to be moving. There are a lot of guys that are linked to Toyota moves and not enough seats to fill them. So for this core group of guys, this might be the last chance that they, as a collective, as trios, this might be their last chance to win it together.
Well done to RJ O'Connell there for not setting off the QI klaxon for saying the last dance, the now most over-cliched term in sports alongside momentum.
Because that was going to be for Alpine, dog.
But even so, this does feel like, unironically, the last dance for this era of Toyota racing in the sense of it feels like it's time to maybe think about making some moves. I mean, I know we've talked about this off the air about how maybe Brendan Hartley could do with a change of scene. We've talked about that, you know, Kabiri Kobayashi. We all love Coach K. We all love Coach K. But as he gets up there into his 40s and his fifth decade of life, he has started making more mistakes. He's not quite as consistent as he was in his prime.
Yeah.
You know, there's been questions about, is Nyck de Vries the real deal at the very highest level of hypercar?
And plus, McLaren could easily call him home. Like, that's one of the leading rumors. And, like, Kobayashi is still younger than Conway. Conway still has the smarts. But I think, you know, as he gets older, like, he may want to move before he is pushed. And there will be suitors for Mike Conway's services if he hits the market.
Absolutely. I think the fairest way I can describe Toyota racing is battle hardened. This has been a core group that has been around for over a decade. They've been here since 2012. They've been the pillars of this series through a lot of change, a lot of controversy, a lot of asterisks. I remember 2023 as well. You mentioned it in the notes. Not just 2016 and the where were you when David Croft cursed them by saying, Andy Davidson, our boy's going to win. And then, oh. And
2023, they were a lockup into Arnage away from potentially a perfect season. Or maybe they don't have a perfect season because if they win Le Mans, they probably don't win the remaining races on that calendar because that's when they get hammered. Who knows how things would have been different, but if they'd won it in 23 or even in 24, things could be so different for the legacy of Toyota racing. Like, but that's all in the past now. I think they look good for this year.
I think they do too. I think they are if I was a betting man, I think I would place Toyota as the favourites going in. Not heavy favourites, but I certainly would. I've got the least amount of question marks about Toyota going into this race compared to anybody else in the field, is what I would say. And I think they will be the safe pick for a lot of people in this field.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, now it's time to get to it, because we've been going on for an hour and a half. It's time to get to the prediction segment of the show. Right. We are going to start with our first category, which is the over-under and the total number of laps completed by the overall class. We've set the over-under at 349.5 laps.
It's a good number. I'm going to take the over. Weather looks good. I think this is not going to be the rampage in LMP1 days where we were getting close to 400 laps overall.
Oh, yeah.
These cars are not that, but I think 370 is more than doable if we don't get like major rain delays like we had a couple of years ago.
Oh yeah, I still remember waking up and like sitting out that entire safety car interlude in 2024. For what it's worth, 387 laps last year. Conditions look good. I'm taking the over, and because we wanted to make sure he get into it, we asked Cam Buckley to mail in his ballot, and he also went with the over.
Okay, first retirement.
Ooh, this is the bad side of it. Now, I've got Cam Buckley's ballot, and he's picked the number 54 Vista AF Corsa Ferrari, which was also one of the first cars to crash out of the race in 2024. Has actually not finished the last two 24 hours of Le Mans, if we're honest. It could be any car on the board. It could be any car in any class. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to be a bit of a hater. I think it's the number 14 TDS racing car. I don't even think Kevin Estre gets a chance to get in that car if he could do an LP2 car. And look,
He's chosen chaos. He's chosen the insane Kevin Estre bullshit klaxon.
the bullshit klaxon won't even get to go off during the middle of the race. That's what I am fearing.
Oh, I'm going to be controversial. I'm going to take a hypercar here.
Ooh.
I'm going to say 19 Genesis. First timer syndrome. It can get anybody. I'm going to say them. And that'll be a real shame. Just to say, we don't wish this on anybody.
Yeah.
And this is a glorified lottery pick. I'm going to say 19 Genesis.
Not a problem. Right, to the predictions in all three classes, starting with LMP2. Cam's prediction for this class was the number 30 Duquesne team. That's Dorian Pan, Richard Verschoor, and Julian Andlauer.
Of course he'd pick a team with a Porsche driver in it. What a surprise. I mean, shit. Do something original, Buckley. I know you're listening, for fuck's sake. You little shit. You know, give me the Polish bakery. I'm going to say 43 to go back-to-back.
That's right. That would be Jakub Schmalkowski, Tom Dillman, and Nick Yeli, all returning from last year's
Poland mentioned.
Poland mentioned. We love that for Jason. We love that for everybody in Poland Massive that's out washing. This puts it on me then. I'll tell you what. I've got to go with United's number 22 car, Lind, Saucy, and Jensen.
It's a fair shout. Fair shout.
What helps here is that Saucy was kind of the weak link relative to his grade, but he's finally started to turn a corner in European Le Mans series. LMP2 is kind of like a single seater. That is his background. He was a bit more comfortable in that than he was in a GT3 car. I think there is potential here for United to pick up 2 and 3 years.
Why not? Why not? Like, Grégoire Saucy is now the gold he always should have been, as opposed to a couple of years ago.
But now he's starting to drive like one, which is the difference.
One of my ones to watch for a reason. It's a great lineup. Why not? Totally get that one.
Right. Now let's go over to LMGT3. Cam Buckley's ballot, of course, was going to have the number 92 Manthei Porsche on it. Why would we have even asked? And to be fair, it's a really good pick, though. God. Oh, I want to pick it so badly. Oh, Dre, who you got?
I am going to stick my faith on history and destiny, and I am going to pick a Ferrari, and I'm going to pick the 150 AF Corsa. Let's go, Lily Wadu, for a class win.
Oh, wow.
Let's do it. Why not? I'm a Ferrari man at my heart, so why not?
I love it, and I love the boldness of it. It hinges a lot on whether Custodio Toledo, a driver whose path to GT3 racing I covered through via a private test at Sebring, if he just runs a clean race, the sky could be the limit here. But I can't take them. You know why? Because I think it's been 25 years since they won for the first time at Le Mans. I know the factory team's not there anymore, but we got something close. We got a car in the similar colors. It's 2/3 of the lineup that won the last GTE AM race at Le Mans. Give me the 33 TF Sport Corvette of Keating, Edgar, and Katz.
Oh, fun. I like it. I like it.
Now, you'll remember I nailed my flag to this mast a year ago, and it kind of blew up. I got a little more confidence this year.
Why not? That's a great pick. Great team. Ben Keating steps up for the big races. Why not? It's a great team.
Do it coming off an injury, too, would be something. Right. The money class. Hypercar. This is why they called you Nostradamus. But for the purposes of entertainment, Cam Buckley has picked the number 7 Toyota Racing TRO10 hybrid.
Asshole. God damn it. I knew he was going to pick the 7. I'm split between two here.
Can you give me mine first?
By all means.
Oof.
You're going to go.
We could cut this dead air out, of course.
You're going to go 8, aren't you?
I kind of have to.
Yeah.
It's that combination of Buemi, Hartley, and Hirakawa when they are firing on all cylinders. That's one of the best endurance racing trios of this era.
It's completely valid. I was going to be honest. The 8 team on paper is so strong, it nearly made me break tradition. Because I've picked Ferrari for the last 3 years. I've been right on 2 of those occasions. I'm going to stick to that plan. And I can't believe I'm doing this. For the 2nd year in a row, the Dre pick is the 51.
Yes. There will be no glass ceiling cracked for LMDH, dog.
I have won with the prancing horse. I refuse to stop now. We are going to get revenge for last year. Pierre Guidi will not fuck up a pit entry this time. And I'm going to go 51. Again. I will not be let down a second time, maybe.
So come back in a week when we do our review of the inevitable BMW's first win at Le Mans since 1999, or some other crazy shit happens. Who knows?
Indeed. That'll do it. I believe in the UK, if you want to watch this race outside of the usual WEC video pass, I believe it is also on TNT Sports this year. A shout out to our friend and yours, Laura Winter, to be out there fronting their coverage for them. Sadly, it's behind the paywall in the UK, but needs must. It's better than nothing. So, like I said, TNT Sports, if you want to watch the race, if you're not on the WEC video pass, it's a pretty good deal, to be honest. I think it's like 55 quid for the whole season if you want the whole of the World Endurance Championship, if you're that way inclined. But yes, that of course will be this weekend. I believe it's 3 p.m. on Saturday we get going. Annoyingly, The final hour will clash with Formula One Spanish Grand Prix on Sunday. Whose bright idea was that? I don't know, but that's going to be a thing.
How very 2016 of it all.
Very much so indeed. So yes, that will be happening, and we'll be talking a little bit of Formula One in our next episode, because of course we've got a Monaco Grand Prix to discuss. It's not like all hell broke loose over there or anything. Oh, that's next time. I've been Dre Harrison, he's been RJ O'Connell. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
And remember, the actual answer is musical instruments. Not many people know this.